Chapter 3, Governing Our Nation and State. Rules are a part of our lives. Sometimes we like them, sometimes we do not. People have learned, though, that rules help people live and work more effectively. However, people do not always agree on the best ways to make or enforce the rules. In a family, parents are usually the rule makers and enforcers. If a mom says that chores must be done and a child does not follow that rule, the mom will decide on a consequence. In a school, principals and teachers usually make the rules and decide on consequences for students who do not follow them. Groups of people living together in an orderly community may form a society. A society has some way of making rules or laws and enforcing them to keep order. Over time, people around the world have developed different types of societies that are ruled in different ways. The founders of the United States of America had thoughts about what would make their new country better than any other country. These thoughts may be called democratic ideals, and they form the basis for republicanism, a representative form of leadership that the founders of our country believed made an almost perfect kind of government, one in which different parts had separate functions. This chapter will provide a brief overview of how people in the United States and in North Carolina have organized government. Learning this now will help you better understand the history of our nation and state. Section 1. Achieving Democratic Ideals. As you read, look for how the issue of fairness guided the Founding Fathers and guides Americans today. The ideals of democracy and popular sovereignty. The movement from monarchy to republicanism. Basic principles of government. And the following terms. Consensus. Founding Fathers. Democracy. Popular sovereignty. Declaration of Independence. Monarchy. Republic. United States Constitution. Amendment. And Bill of Rights. Imagine it is a beautiful Saturday afternoon in North Carolina. You and some friends have decided to meet for a movie and a meal. As you gather, you realize that everyone has a different movie and a different restaurant in mind. How can this problem be solved? For many American youth, the response might be something like, "Let's vote on it." Each friend would state the case for a particular movie, and some agreement would be reached, either by consensus, general agreement, or actual vote. The restaurant problem might be solved in the same way. With a plan in place, you and your friends go off to enjoy the time together. Across town, imagine two local teams are playing a heated soccer game. The winner will move on to the tournament's playoff game. It is an aggressive match, with the chance for some injuries if things get out of hand. Fortunately, the referee is from a nearby town and is very knowledgeable about the game. She has made sure the rules are being followed and is enforcing penalties on both sides. In the end, one side wins, and the other, in a sportsmanlike move, congratulates the winners. Both teams thank the referee for her work. The attitudes present in both of these stories are such a part of Americans' lives and attitudes that you might not even realize they exist. Think back to the first story. Why should the situation involve a vote and not some other method for choosing? A decision could have been reached by allowing the oldest to choose. Perhaps the oldest male should choose, or maybe the male with the most money. Maybe the loudest or bossiest should make the choice. Why not an arm wrestling contest to decide? Now think about the soccer game. Why should there even be a referee? If there is one, why would it be important that the referee was from out of town and knowledgeable about the game? As you think about these questions, you may have used the word fair. Many would make the argument that voting for the movie and restaurant is the fairest method of choosing. Using a knowledgeable referee from out of town is fairer to both teams than not having a referee or using one who might know one team's players. An out-of-town official probably won't know the players, so the referee's calls would likely be fair to both teams. It might surprise you to know how often American students think about the issue of fairness. In fact, fairness was an idea that was important to our Founding Fathers, the leaders who planned how the government of the United States would be organized, as well. The way our lands were governed did not seem fair to many of the American colonists back in the mid-1700s. But what seems fair may depend upon your point of view. as you will learn in this chapter and in many instances in history. Democratic ideals. Throughout the history of our nation and state, there has been a vision of creating the best possible government. People have had different ideas of how to do this, and they have sometimes had different opinions of what the finished product would look like. This vision of what would be a perfect government is called an ideal. Just as an artist works to bring a vision to life in a painting or sculpture, U.S. citizens have worked to make a vision of good government a reality. This process has taken a lot of time, and there have been bumps along the way. However, as you learn the history of our nation and state, you will see that improvements have been made. Today, more North Carolina citizens are able to vote and participate in government than ever before. Participation by most or all citizens is a key democratic ideal. The term democracy means control of a group or country by its members. When friends decide on a movie by debating, then voting, they have practiced democracy. It would be impossible for every North Carolina citizen to vote on every issue related to running our large state. People do not have the time to study every issue, and most people do not really want to. Instead, we elect representatives to make decisions and run the country and state on a day-to-day basis. Many countries today have a similar system of government, but not all countries are run this way. Some countries have an election for their leader, but there is only one person on the ballot, and that person was chosen by a small group of powerful men. In other places, a ruler may be in place because he controls the military. Citizens follow his orders because he can use the power of his army to force obedience. Moving back through the centuries, it is possible to see how, little by little, the ancestors of our founders were working to expand the right to govern themselves to more people. In our country today, the ideal of popular sovereignty, or rule by the people through their votes, is at the center of what makes our country different and great. As you learn about the history of the United States and North Carolina, consider how these democratic ideals developed. The first three were described by Thomas Jefferson in the Declaration of Independence of the United States. Life. Everyone has the right to live, and the government has the responsibility to protect its citizens. Liberty. Everyone has the freedom to act, behave, and think as they wish without government interference, as long as the liberty of others is not abused. Pursuit of happiness. Everyone should be able to pursue happiness as long as a person does not abuse the rights of others. From monarchy to republicanism. Before learning about how our government is organized today, it is helpful to learn more about how it used to be. The way we run our country was, and perhaps still is, considered a great experiment. The question is, are ordinary citizens able to elect good leaders to run a vast and powerful country? In Europe, where most of the colonists and their families originated, most people lived under a monarchy, ruled by a king or queen. In a monarchy, the leader is in place for life and is selected based on ancestry. Other families in Europe ruled smaller portions of their country and had titles such as duke or duchess, baron or baroness, count or countess. These people formed the aristocracy, or nobility. Class systems were very rigid. Commoners included merchants, craftsmen, and peasants. Peasants were the largest group and were often doomed to a life of poverty serving the local noblemen. Our founding fathers had grown up in America as colonists under a king and parliament who ruled from faraway England. If the king and parliament created a law taxing the people of North Carolina, paperwork would have to cross the Atlantic by ship and then travel overland to reach the colonial governor. After delays and deliberations, a letter of concern written back to the king could take an even longer time to reach him. If he responded and awaited a reply, a year could go by in which unhappy subjects felt ignored by their distant ruler. Many colonists of the late 1600s and early 1700s thought that life in the New World could be different. They believed that they were living successfully without the distant king's help and protection. Of course, the king would likely have had a different opinion. In addition, many in the colonies believed that their current system of government was corrupt. It seemed that the king's friends, or friends of the king's friends, were able to get special treatment, and were making a lot of money while most colonists remained in poverty. In the American colonies, the idea grew of an ideal republic, a country in which citizens ruled by voting for their leaders. Each citizen would choose a candidate based not on the candidate's family or financial background, but on his qualifications to lead and his plans for governing. Some of these new ideas were put forth by John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Jefferson, and James Madison. Among them were ideas that we still use today. Checks and balances. This spreads political power into different branches of government. Each branch has the ability to hold the other branches accountable. Citizen electors. Those with the right to vote would choose a candidate based on merit rather than ancestry. Frequent elections. These ensure that people have a voice and leaders are held accountable. No elected positions endure for the life of the candidate. Nor are all the leaders elected at the same time. This ensures continuity of experience. Weak executive. Our leader, the president or state governor, will not be allowed absolute power because too much power provides an opportunity for corruption, which will harm the common good. Basic principles of government. The genius of American government is the separation of powers into the legislative, executive, and judicial branches and the division of powers into the federal, state, and local levels. Underlying American government in all branches and at all levels are certain basic principles. In this section, we will examine the most significant of those basic principles. Rule of law. The United States Constitution, the document written in 1787 and ratified in 1788 that set up our nation's current framework for government, is the supreme law of the land. All laws, policies, and procedures of federal, state, and local government must be consistent with that fundamental law. American government is based on the rule of law and not of people. Popular sovereignty and the consent of the governed. In the United States, the people are sovereign, possessing supreme power, and are the source of power and authority. The people elect officials to specific terms in office, and those officials govern only by the consent of the governed. Checks and balances and limited government. To set up a system of checks and balances and to limit the power of government, the Founding Fathers established three separate branches, legislative, executive, and judicial, and various levels of government. Each branch and each level is limited in its power and authority. Representative government. The American people at all levels of government elect public officials to specific terms in office. Public officials represent the people. At the end of their terms, the people may return them to office unless there are term limits or replace them. The protections of the Bill of Rights. When the Founding Fathers completed the Constitution in 1787, some delegates to the convention complained that the document did not enumerate, list, the specific rights of American citizens. This included many of the citizens of North Carolina, who at first refused to approve the Constitution because it lacked such a guarantee of their rights. One of North Carolina's contributions to the ratification of the Constitution was the successful effort to have these amendments, additions or changes to a constitution or other document, passed. In 1791, the first 10 amendments were adopted. Known as the Bill of Rights, these amendments enumerate the rights of American citizenship.